This is Jay Sekulow. New developments in the ongoing threat from Iran.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, there are some big developments. A brand new report has just come out from the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. That's chaired by Senator Rob Portman. The report is entitled Review of U.S. Treasury Department's License to Convert Iranian Assets Using the U.S. Financial System. This was during the negotiations for the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And it was the freeing up of certain billions of dollars to Iran. The question was they were trying to get U.S. dollar conversion, and there were prohibitions against it. And despite the fact that the government, the United States government under President Obama, said on multiple occasions that there was no attempt by U.S. agencies to assist the Iranians in converting the assets. In fact, there's a statement in the report that says, to be clear, the U.S. Department of Treasury is not working on behalf of Iran to enable Iranian access to U.S. dollars elsewhere in the international financial system, nor are we assisting Iran in gaining access to dollar payment systems outside the U.S. financial system. But they were also on, this is just the fact, trying to get two U.S. banks to be involved. This is the U.S. government getting banks to convert Iranian currency into U.S. dollars. Dan, this report has just come out. We're going to get into this a lot more tomorrow. We're going to give everybody a primer on the situation with Iran to put this in context. But this report is breathtaking in scope.
Jay, this is a bombshell. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And I really encourage people to tune in tomorrow as we get more in depth, because they need to understand exactly what happened here. Let me give you a 30-second overview. The JCPOA, the Iran deal, as bad as it was, Jay, one of the things that even the Obama administration swore to Congress under oath that it would not do is grant the Iranians access to either the U.S. banking system or the U.S. dollar. Jay, they continued to testify all the way through this process that that was the case. This report now shows conclusively that they did two things. Number one, they specifically granted a license to Iran to use U.S. banks to convert $5.7 billion into U.S. dollars and then into euros. That was a direct violation of the deal authorized by the Obama administration. And then, Jay, this is maybe even more breathtaking. After they granted that license, they actually contacted two U.S. banks that had a relationship with this Omani bank and encouraged them to do the transaction in contradiction to their view of the reading of the deal. Now, Jay, those two banks didn't do it, but let me just boil it down to this. The Obama administration granted this license to violate the deal and then lobbied U.S. banks to follow their lead. This is a bombshell. People need to understand it. We're going to break it all down for them tomorrow.
Yeah, so the Treasury Secretary Jack Lew under President Obama was involved in this. They even threatened to bring in the Secretary of State John Kerry. So we're going to get into this report. It's a lengthy report, so we're going to evaluate it. It just came out as we're going to air. We're going to evaluate it for the broadcast tomorrow. We'll have commentary on that. But I thought it's appropriate because Iran is such a big central issue. In fact, Benjamin Netanyahu today is in England, in London, talking with Theresa May on the whole Iranian situation and the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, what Europe's going to do on this. So that's being discussed even today. What I thought we would do on this broadcast is get you current, give you some history here of what the Iranians are up to. They are, and we've said it over and over again, the largest exporter of terrorism in the world, the largest exporter of terrorism in the world as a state actor. We have a comprehensive analysis of this. We're going to give you on this broadcast from the experts the real issues and what Iran is really up to. We did this on location in the Middle East, so this is going to be a phenomenal program both for our radio and our audiences watching on our social media platforms or ACLJ.org. So you're going to want to stay tuned. A lot of great information ahead, so you want to stay tuned. Also, don't forget, your support of the ACLJ keeps the ACLJ operating. You can do that at ACLJ.org, ACLJ.org. And our book on Jerusalem is now available for pre-order at Barnes & Noble and also on Amazon. We've got a lot of great information ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to JSAC Yale Live. We're going to continue our content from our film, The Export. Again, you can watch the full-length film as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land, at acljfilms.com. Let's go back to The Export.
We can create a modern international community that is respectful, that is secure, that is prosperous, that there are not tensions, inevitable tensions, between cultures, which I think is extraordinarily important. That's something that's very important to me.
He really wanted this to be a new beginning of the relationship between the United States and the Muslim world. He gave what has now become known as Obama's Cairo Initiative. Perhaps foremost, he wanted me to find a way to reach out to the Muslim world and engage much more with dominantly Muslim nations.
We do not consider ourselves a Christian nation or a Jewish nation or a Muslim nation. We consider ourselves a nation of citizens.
In Iran today, thousands of demonstrators in various locations kept up their public pressure on the Shah.
Khomeini is scheduled to return to Iran Friday after 15 years in exile. Today, the 78-year-old religious leader appeared to be in an uncompromising mood.
One of the chants today was bring back Khomeini, this man, presently living in Paris.
It was over 30 years ago that the revolution took place in Iran, led by a cleric named the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had actually been exiled out of Iran under the Shah of Iran's previous regime. Now, the Shah was put in place, and while there were a number of abuses under his regime, there was stability in the region, and radical Islamists did not have a foothold of control of a government. That changed in 1979. When the Ayatollah Khomeini came in and the Shah of Iran was removed from leadership, a major change and shift took place in the region. The region became radical, and it became radical in the context of Islam. And that has shaped not only Iran, but the Middle East, and even in the United States, even today. Now, what this movie is going to do is take a look at radical Islam's conquest, its mentality for control, and the various ways that it is engaging in infiltrating the West. Now, what we've seen so far, you've heard about jihad, lawfare, nuclear programs, and terrorism. But let's break it down. What is jihad? Jihad's the holy war. How do you engage in the holy war? You use the legal system as part of it. Sure, you use airplanes and turn them into bombs and run them into buildings. You use suicide bombers. You try to take over governments. But you also use the legal system, both domestic legal systems in the United States, but international legal systems as well, including the United Nations. And then, of course, there's nuclear programs. The danger of a nuclear threat is significant. It becomes part of the terrorist ploy. but is a ploy with tremendous consequences. The situation in Iran is not that much different than 32 years later as we look at the situation in Egypt. A lot of the issues that have developed over the last several months have revolved around the fact that what role would the Muslim Brotherhood have in a government in Egypt? And the short answer to that is any role for the Muslim Brotherhood starts looking an awful lot like Ayatollah Khomeini revisited. Now, I had the chance to sit down with someone who has been to the region in the Middle East many, many times. That is Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Let me ask you first your sense when you talk about radical Islam, how significant is the conflict with radical Islam and its impact it's having not only in the region, but around the globe?
Jay, it's existential for us. Radical Islam intends that all of us live under Sharia law. They are willing, and not just willing, but intend to die to make it happen. Of course, there's no greater honor than to kill an infidel in the process of getting killed yourself. And so if you look at what we've been up against, not really since 2001, actually going back to 1979, when the Ayatollah Khomeini goes back to Qom from Paris and begins to organize not the Iranian revolution, but the Islamic revolution.
Ayatollah Khomeini left Tehran and moved to Qom, which is Iran's holy city, where he lived until the Shah deported him 15 years ago and may now wish he hadn't. He said as he went, he would keep control of the country, as he put it, for the 1 or 2 years he has left to live.
Ayatollah Khomeini returned to the Shah's least favorite city, Qom, where religious opposition to the Shah began.
Everybody looked at it, and I confess to being part of the Reagan administration 1981 onwards. We looked at it as, look, it's just 10% of Islam. We don't have to worry about this.
Khomeini was forced to leave Qom 15 years ago after the Shah's troops killed hundreds of people in an unsuccessful purge of dissidents. But Khomeini indicated he will maintain control and direction of the government because he believes there should be no separation of church and state. And Khomeini said he does not want a democratic republic. He wants an Islamic republic.
It has become a global threat. It's a threat right here in the United States of America. And it's growing. It's growing in large part because we have a commander-in-chief, head of state, chief executive, who refuses to name the enemy. The enemy is radical Islam.
President of the United States goes to the University of Cairo. He says that America, although there's a lot of Christians, we're not a Christian nation. We're not a Jewish nation. He says we're a nation of principles, which is a non-statement. Then you look at the fact, what you just said, that in 1948, our leadership, the government, and others in the world understood that there was this spiritual bond, if you will. Now we have this complete shift in relationship. You've got an Iranian threat that most of us believe is real, but you've been there more than most people. You know the people involved, you know the military, you've reviewed the documents, you've seen the evidence, you've been there firsthand. How serious is the Iranian Islamic threat to world stability?
It will change the world as we know it today if the Iranians, and I believe that they're headed in this direction, put on the end of one of those North Korean-provided missiles anything that looks like a warhead. And the Iranians are building not only the warheads, they have the means of delivering it, and I'm telling you, target number one is Israel. The Israelis cannot abide that. It is truly an existential threat.
As a lawyer, I like to deal with evidence, and part of that evidence is to actually take you to the region where the conflict is developing. That is, as Oliver North just said, an existential threat in the Middle East, so we traveled to Israel, where the opportunity to talk with members of the military, members of the government, some of the leading journalists in the area, to get a first-hand look at how the threat of radical Islam and Iran impacts Israel, the region, and the world. I had a chance to sit down with one of the most noted journalists in the Middle East, Renan Bergman, to get his impact and impressions as to what's happening in the region right now as it relates to Iran and possible war and conflict with Iran.
First, very basic and fundamental question. Is there a war going on with Iran right now?
This is the longest ongoing war in the Middle East. It has been taking place since Ayatollah Khomeini took over the Islamic Republic of Iran in the 1st of February 1979. It has been going on every day until this minute. Under the public's radar, nobody knows the full details of that, but from almost day one, the Islamic Republic of Iran tried to obtain nuclear weapon and tried to export the revolution to proxy jihadist movement in the Middle East, trying to imitate the geniusy in the revolution of Khomeini to other places. And at the same time, the secret services of the United States and Israel declared war on Iran, and this is the clandestine war between these two forces.
Iran was a free country. One has to remember, under the Shah, very advanced, very Western, very scientifically very impressive. It was taken over by this regime of fundamentalism, and really Black Knight came over Iran. So definitely America stands and works for the values that Iran is against. But there's a special role for Israel here. Iran uses rhetoric that we haven't heard for decades. Eliminating Israel. Israel should not exist, has no right to exist. Israel, I quote, is a cancerous tumor that should be removed from the Middle East. It's said again and again. So when you see a country that says you are not legitimate, you will not exist in the end of the game here, and we go nuclear and involved in terror like no other country, to put it in an understatement, it's a cause for concern.
Well, right now, Iran is the world's central banker to international terrorism. It funds Hamas, Hezbollah, terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world. If you add to existing Iranian activities the capability to deliver nuclear weapons anywhere in the world, you make Iran a world power and a world threat. That's why it is legitimate for the United States, Israel, or others to take action now in self-defense to prevent Iran from continuing to violate its own treaty obligations and obtain nuclear weapons. It's not a desirable alternative, to be sure, but the preemptive use of military force in this case is actually far preferable to the world as it would be once Iran gets nuclear weapons.
But it's interesting in a way, you see. Let me go one step deeper. Sure. The paradigm that we knew was the paradigm of nation states. Israel is a Jewish state, they are Arab states. Now you see a religious approach. They speak not in terms of political dialogue with Israel, what the borders should be, what this policy should be, but they speak of illegitimacy in the name of God. From Iran, from Hezbollah, and from Hamas, you hear that it's a religious commandment that Israel should not exist, that a non-Muslim state cannot be here. If this has the upper hand, this trend, it's going to be tougher. This layer of religious fanaticism on top of political debates makes debates almost without a resolution. Because, you know, gods never compromise. People do. Right. If you get it from God that you can't have an enemy alive, then what hope do we have? So I think it's the interest of really world order that this new trend of making everything religious commandment and the fanaticism that goes with it loses this fight.
All right, we'll be right back with more on Jay Sekulow Live. More content from our film, The Export. You can find it at ACLJfilms.com, as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to JSAC Yale Live. We're going to continue our content from our film, The Export. Again, you can watch the full-length film as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land, at acljfilms.com. Let's go back to The Export.
I don't have to be a scholar. You know, you just read Ahmadinejad's own speeches. You read their philosophy. You read their comments that they're making in public speeches in the Iranian press and international press. And it's clear. Their intention is right there. They're saying it explicitly. They deny Israel's right to exist. They basically stand against every value that you're familiar with in America, from freedom of speech to women's rights to just about every issue. They're on the wrong side of the issue. So, of course, when such a country is given nuclear capabilities, it's a concern, not only for Israel, but also to the entire community.
The statements that they make that comes out of Ahmadinejad, which is approved by the Ayatollahs, if not written by the Ayatollahs, about Israel being a cancer that needs to be removed, Hamas saying this, and Israel needs to be destroyed. Is there any doubt in your mind that when they say that, that Israel should be wiped out, that they mean it?
I don't have the luxury not to believe it. It was a mistake that we made in our history where we thought, they only say they don't mean it. How can they really do this thing like this? Can they really eliminate the people? Can they destroy people? Can they build extermination camps? Well, we don't take things easily anymore.
I think Ahmadinejad, I've often said, is one of the greatest Israeli assets we could ever have thought of, because he's so clear in what he is saying and he's so offensive in what he's saying that we don't have to explain to the world at large what it is the Iranians are about. We don't have to explain to the world what the Iranian threat is. We don't have to explain to the world what basic anti-Semitism is, the hatred of the other religion. I think this is so clear for what he's been saying. He says it better than anybody else. And I think that if we hadn't had him there, we should have made every effort to get him elected in order that he should represent Iran as it is.
We still don't get what jihad is. Jihad, whether it is done through violence or whether it's done by stealthier measures, is always and everywhere about Sharia. It's about the implementation of Sharia, the spread of Sharia, and the defense of Sharia. Sharia is the Islamic legal and political framework. We would like to think of Islam as just another religion, you know, just a set of religious principles that's separate from our secular societal life. It's anything but. It's a full-service, comprehensive, political, social, and economic system, a military system, that happens to have some spiritual elements. But its ambitions are actually authoritarian in the sense that you have a central Islamic state that controls everything. And it's totalitarian in the sense that it really does want to control everything.
Is
every
it geopolitical
aspect.
In scope?
Yes, absolutely. Every aspect of life. The threat to us is much bigger and broader than just terrorism. And it's really a march through our institutions, whether it's our political institutions, the law, our whole society.
There is a law in Sharia that says it's obligatory for a Muslim to lie if the purpose is obligatory. So if your purpose is
It
to
authorizes,
do,
under Sharia law, the ability to lie to get the end mean.
It doesn't authorize it. It obliges you,
you must lie.
You must lie if your purpose is to promote Islam.
And this is called taqiyya?
It's called taqiyya, but it's more than that. It becomes automatic in our character as Muslims to defend Islam. The reputation of Islam, its ability to grow, is the most important thing. Islam is always looking at growth in numbers. And the key thing about Sharia, which makes it even worse than if you leave it in the hands of government, is that any Muslim who recognizes that a person has committed apostasy,
which means just leaving the religion,
you you will be forgiven if you kill, them.
An apostate Muslim is worse than an infidel. They can tolerate a Christian or a Jew as the people of the book, although barely.
Right.
But even if they can tolerate those, they must never tolerate an apostate, somebody who turned his back on Islam. He is as good or she is as good as dead, and they'll rather kill him than see them embracing the Christian faith.
In order to get a first-hand understanding of what it means to live under an Islamic regime, but also to understand what radicalization means to the region, I thought it'd be good to talk to someone that came from that environment, that knew it firsthand, not just reading about it, but from personal experience. Taz Sada has actually served in that regime. Now he, of course, is the founder of a great ministry called Seeds of Hope right there in the Middle East. Prior to this, he served as a sniper for Yasser Arafat.
Islam have an agenda, a very clear agenda, Islamizing the world. Absolutely. And they're going to implement Sharia law. Sharia law is the toughest laws you'll ever encounter in your life. They are able to implement that in London, in England. And they are working on that in America.
Peace in their mind is not between, let's say, Muslims and infidels. Peace is when infidels live under the umbrella of Islam. And this, the conquest, brings peace in the mind. Theoretically, there cannot be, between Islamic State or the Caliphate State and other infidel states. Eternal war should be between them. Peace can reign only when everybody comes under the umbrella of Islam.
Israel is preparing for a war. If you go to the Air Force fields, if you go to Army secret camps, if you go to special units, if you go to the Chief of Staff in Tel Aviv, you would see people preparing for war, preparing for a strike on Iran and the possible outcomes of such a strike, or preparing for Iran trying to burn the area in order to divert attention from the nuclear project.
One of the most dangerous areas of the region in the Middle East is the border between Israel and Lebanon. Lebanon, of course, is now controlled by Hezbollah, and that means you've got a radical Islamist government controlling actual government facilities, including the military. Two Israeli soldiers were recently killed in the very area where we are now at. In putting this documentary together, we wanted to talk to those that are not only talking about the conflict, that are doing strategy about the conflict, but actually to soldiers who are engaged in the conflict.
So we've had this situation, we talked about this with the lack of uniforms, it's a different kind of warfare. They're hiding out in villages.
Yes.
How do you go about defending your country when they're engaged in this kind
of
activity?
Well, like I said before, it's very hard. We try to learn on a daily basis what kind of movement is a citizen movement, what kind of movement doesn't serve any cause except Hezbollah tasks. And we know from all certain places what houses they own, what houses they would like to take over in a battle day.
Is it house to house?
Yes. They can. They live among the citizens. Among the citizens, you can see a Hezbollah house, regular people house, and we had something in battle days before. The citizens just leave the villages, and it becomes a little war zone inside the village.
All right, we'll be right back with more on Jay Sekulow Live. More content from our film, The Export. You can find it at acljfilms.com, as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land. We'll be right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. know, part of what we do at the American Center for Law and Justice is media advocacy, and that is you're watching portions of specials that we've put together on these topics. And we do that as a form of education. And Logan, and you've got a great team that are in our ACLJ film group that works on these documentaries. And they're really, many of them are timeless. I mean, they talk in the media, they call them evergreen, yep, but they really are. And yeah, of course, Iran back in the news. So we have the documentary on Iran.
Right,
we have Israel. We have the documentary on Israel.
Right. And the Iran piece that just ran, as you heard some of that, you're going to continue to hear more from it. But again, you can watch it at ACLJfilms.com, is mainly due to the fact that we do also a deep dive into history, so you'll be able to kind of set yourself up for what's happening today. So you hear some of what happened historically. So we talk in the export, you've heard about what happened in the late 70s with the revolution. And now we move forward to our new film, Protecting the Promised Land, which is about Israel. And really, again, not only historically, but what the future holds for the state of Israel and why it's important.
Yeah, so the issues here that we try to cover in our films are basically contemporary issues. But as Logan said, I think it's important, is the history that we get into. So you understand the nature of the conflict we're dealing with today. But you've got to understand the history of how all this came together to understand what we're dealing with today. And what we've done through these films is education. That's what we do on this broadcast. Look, media advocacy is a big part of what we do.
That's right. When you go to our website, or maybe you listen to the radio show or watch online, you know, sometimes it's a lot of people who have very similar points of view. But when you create a film, a documentary that can be widely distributed, you have the opportunity to reach people that you may not be reaching through your traditional platform. So when we reach people at the ACLJ, like I said, through daily radio, yes, there's a lot of people that turn on, never heard anything like this before, are going to catch it. But there are a lot of people also who'll be flipping around, who'll be looking for films, looking for documentaries about certain topics, and we can be there to educate them specifically from the point of view of the American Center for Law and Justice. But with that comes the new trailer for our new film. We want to hear you guys to hear the trailer for our new film that's available right now at acljfilms.com. You can find out how to watch it right from there. This is the trailer for Protecting the Promised Land, our new film on Israel.
In the last 7 years, the Middle East went through an earthquake.
Today, the group Hamas declared a day of rage, urging attacks on Israelis.
If you step back and look at the picture, you can see the circle enclosing around Israel.
This conflict has never been about establishing a Palestinian state. It's always been about the existence of a Jewish state.
Jewish wedding in Israel interrupted by air raid sirens.
Human shielding pays today.
Why did you put the rocket there next to the school? That's the person that committed a crime against humanity.
BDS is a new form of anti-Semitism. The call to boycott the state of Israel, to divest investment from the state of Israel.
Graphic new video of violent protests and terror attacks coming out of Israel.
That messaging will continue. So we've got to be prepared to be aggressive in fighting it anytime it raises.
The entire conception of this is to destroy Israel by turning Israel into an oppressor and using all these different instrumentalities, not just warfare on the battlefield, but lawfare.
When they say that Israel should be wiped out, that they mean it?
I don't have the luxury not to believe it.
You know, as all these issues develop and we're able to bring you these films and documentaries and specials and bring you radio, we're very fortunate to be able to come to you each and every day with breaking news. And some days, as you know, like last week, went multiple times during the day. That's a big part of what we do.
That's right. Big part of the ACLJ's work is media advocacy. You can see, look, you've seen us all over television. You see us on all forms of media. You hear us every day on radio. We're broadcasting live on social media where you can directly share this with your audience, with your friends, and be a part of the conversation as well. It's not just a one-way street. You're able to comment. You're able to call. You're able to be a part of the show and be a part of what we're doing here, because it's not just a show. It's an educational environment so people can learn from what we do here.
And sometimes you see us on media even when we're not talking.
Yeah, you never know. You'll find us everywhere. But with this, with these films that we produce each and every year, you'll get a new feature-length documentary film, as well as countless videos that are released every day from our video team. You'll be able to, again, have content you can share.
We kind of produce a film a day.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what our team does. And you can find all of those full-length films at acljfilms.com, and that includes our new film, Protecting the Promised Land. And you should check it out right now. We'll be right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to JSAC Yale Live. We're going to continue our content from our film, The Export. Again, you can watch the full-length film as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land, at acljfilms.com. Let's go back to The Export.
Right over there and right over there are two villages controlled by Hezbollah, and we've got, coming in our background right now, jeeps from the Israeli Defense Force. This is the blue line. How significant of a zone is this? How dangerous of a zone is this?
You know, I must say that in my experience for the past 30 years, you know, I've been to this movie before.
Yeah.
Maybe the difference is now it's a 3D movie.
Yeah.
With so many other forces involved. But this is a security border in Israel. There's peace now. It's a fragile peace. It's a deceptive peace.
Why do you say, we talked about that before. Why deceptive peace?
It's deceptive because at any moment, you know, these 40,000 rockets and missiles on the border with Lebanon could, you know, be sprung and fired against Israel. We have a village here, Khule. Okay, a Shiite village on the border out of several hundred Shiite villages, right there. And this village, now it's quiet. Now there is clearly an understanding and orders from Hezbollah not to start anything right now because it doesn't suit neither Hezbollah nor Iran. But on every September 11, they fire rockets into Israel. Why? To commemorate 9/11. Every September 11, which in a sense shows you what has changed from the first Lebanese war to the second Lebanese war, and which requires us to be on guard 24/7.
All right, so talking about 24/7, you got jeeps coming up right now. What's the function? What are they doing? You're a military man.
Well, they're conducting patrols along this border to prevent any effort by the terrorists at any given moment to break through the fence, to kidnap soldiers like we had in the past, or to penetrate into one of the settlements here, which are now enjoying relative peace.
Yeah.
But that relative peace is dependent on these young boys who patrol this border 24/7.
So here's the other question. So it's a battle with Hezbollah, but is it really a battle with Iran?
No doubt. I would say that the confrontation with Iran starts here. We are in one of those hot spots. It looks very fragile, very passive, placid, and very quiet. But at any moment, if Hezbollah, the leaders of the Revolutionary Guard in Tehran, or their proxies in Damascus decide that they want to start a war, it serves Iran, they'll start firing.
So is it fair to say that Iran could call the terms and the timing of a conflict?
No doubt that Iran calls the shots, not only here. It calls the shots in other parts of the Middle East where it can use its proxies and its control and influence over terrorist organization to steer havoc, to create a shooting war. It's true in Iraq, where Iran is involved. It's true in other parts of the Middle East. And no doubt, here is the largest concentration of, I would say, frontline Iranian troops. Hezbollah has 40,000 missiles deployed in the villages.
In villages just like this.
And for us, or for these people here, these young people, it becomes very difficult to discern who is a friend, who is a foe. They are entrenched inside civilian neighborhoods, inside the villages, underneath the houses. They have stockpiles of weapons ready just for the order to go. And therefore, it requires us to really be very vigilant and maintain readiness on a 24-hour, 7 days a week. And that's what these young boys are doing here.
Well, you have to understand what is at stake. What is at stake is your whole war against international terrorism when you get the biggest supporter of international terrorism in the world under a nuclear umbrella. What is at stake are your alliances, not just with Israel, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain. All those countries are looking for American leadership. And if they feel completely unprotected, well, what you're going to get is a Middle Eastern version of fiddlinization. They will begin to receive Iranian delegations, and they'll try and make do with the Iranian leadership. What that does for the supply of oil in the future, for the price of oil, and basically the whole global balance of power, doesn't look good.
Insecurity, but also the ending of democracies like Israel as we know it?
Right. I think in a multipolar nuclear Middle East, you'd have many countries looking at the one next door saying, I wonder if I should strike first before he strikes me. And I would think at that point, the use of nuclear weapons becomes almost inevitable.
Last question, and that is, can the world afford to wait?
I don't believe so, and I've felt this way for some time. I think it is a mistake to overestimate how much time we have in Iran. I don't believe in just-in-time non-proliferation, because if you miscalculate and Iran gets nuclear weapons, the entire balance of power has changed. We're in a very critical year this year.
Sanctions so far had tactical successes, but they did not reach the strategic goal. The strategic goal is to convince the Iranian regime that if they continue the project, the sanctions would cause demonstration in the street and the collapse of the regime. Sanctions must convince the Iranian regime to rethink the whole project over again and cancel it. If sanctions won't work, and so far they don't, Israel would take the decision, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, for that sake, any other Israeli Prime Minister, would take the decision, launch the bombers, call for the strike over the Iranian nuclear sites, knowing that it would bear severe consequences, but still would not let Israeli and Jewish population be under threat of annihilation. The trauma of the Holocaust is so strong and is so inherent to the Israeli genome, to the Jewish genome, that no Israeli prime minister will let a hostile country that calls for the destruction of Israel have the capability to execute such an extinction.
Is your sense that the goal here of Iran is simply the desire to annihilate Israel? They talk about that openly. They say, we want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. But they really are looking much broader than that, aren't they? I mean, Israel is kind of in the way from the rest of the conquest.
Yeah, the main reason for trying to achieve a nuclear capability is to be able to cope with Israel and probably to destroy Israel. Because once they will have such a bomb, they will face a very, very huge temptation to use it. And I think that they might use it. I don't want to be like a rat in a lab waiting to see either the Iranians will use a bomb once they have it or they will not use it.
Nobody knows whether they would use it. Normally speaking, one assumes that if somebody is producing a weapon, they have the intention of using it. But in the nuclear field, it's different. The United States and the Soviet Union produced nuclear weapons for scores of years, but they never used them. And there was a mutual deterrent, as you know.
Right.
So whether Iran would want to use the weapon, I do not know. I think they themselves do not know yet. But they certainly would like to have the option of having such a weapon, as I said, in order either to use it in certain circumstances or to use it as a threat to extort from countries in the region concessions which they would like these countries to make on the political field, on the strategic field, on the economic field, and on other fields.
I think that the Iranians have demonstrated a pragmatic and rational policy when the regime was under threat of annihilation. They know that Israel would strike them back with nuclear weapon. They know that Israel would put them back to the Stone Age. And from their point of view, their survival in the regime, in this rotten, corrupted regime, is the sole or the central reason. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I don't think that they would use it only if they're back to the war. However, Israel and the United States should do whatever they can to prevent Iran from being nuclear, from getting the nuclear capability, because A, it would prevent any sort of retaliation against Iran. Second, Iran would become completely rogue in its support to jihadist group. Third, it would start a nuclear war race in the Middle East. And you know, this is something you know where you start, but once Sunni, so-called moderate countries like Egypt, like Jordan, like Algeria, like Saudi Arabia would acquire a nuclear weapon, this is going to be a very unpleasant place to live in.
There is a way to put the Iranian regime, first of all, in a dilemma, whether to become nuclear or to survive. And by putting this regime in the dilemma, I believe that at the end, they prefer to survive. And it should be a strategy consist of four elements. Political isolation of the regime, crippling economic sanctions, Western support to the internal opposition in Iran, and a credible military option to convince the Iranian regime that there is no way to escape or to get away with a nuclear option. And as Supreme Leader Khamenei in 2003 decided to suspend the military nuclear option when he saw that it might be targeted in the third phase of the American offensive after 9/11, has he preferred survivability? I believe that again, he will prefer survivability.
Is this a war we win or can win? The war with Iran.
This is a war that we can win if we are stubborn and not let the other side have the upper hand in the initiative. This is a war that if the United States and Israel are persistent, can be won. But in order to win this war, the threat must be truly perceived. And I'm not sure that by all Americans, and by all Europeans for that sake, the extent of the threat is well perceived and understood.
First of all, you call the enemy what it is. Sun Tzu, who is the great military philosopher and theologian of ancient China, wrote that if you don't know your enemy, you will lose to your enemy.
All right, we'll be right back with more on JSEC Hill Live. More content from our film, The Export. You can find it at aclgfilms.com, as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land. We'll be right back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue, not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Whether it's the blatant and stated desire of ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, or Iran to wipe Israel from the face of the earth, or the more subtle but equally insidious aim to delegitimize Israel's existence through efforts at UNESCO, the goal is the same, to get rid of Israel. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. The official release date of the book is June 12th, but don't wait. Be among the first to be informed. You can pre-order your copy of Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Order now online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. So look, there's been an ongoing attempt by the Iranian people. And when we're making these statements about Iran, remember who we're talking about. We're talking about the government. We're talking about the Ayatollahs. And these are the Islamic revolutionary leaders. The fact of the matter is the people of Iran want change. We saw that years ago when those protests took place. And unfortunately, the Obama administration just turned away when there were literally millions of people on the streets of Tehran, mostly college students and younger, that wanted change, or even some older folks that remembered what it was like to live with more freedom. And I don't think that that spark is gone. In fact, I think that the reality is it's there more than ever. And that's what we're trying to show you. Again, it's not targeted at the people of Iran. It's targeted at these regimes that are oppressing their own people. That's a big part of what this means.
It's a fantastic piece. You can watch the full-length documentary at acljfilms.com.
Anti-government protests in Iran growing more violent by the day with no signs of letting up. It's the biggest uprising in Iran since 2009 during President Obama's first year in office.
Breaking news on Iran and those demonstrations that we've seen there with a number of people killed over the last few days, demonstrations against the government across a number of different towns and cities.
President Trump turned to Twitter to talk about the protests that we are seeing. Let's take a look at that. Iran is failing at every level despite the terrible deal made with them by the Obama administration. The great Iranian people have been repressed for many years. They are hungry for food and for freedom. Along with human rights, the wealth of Iran is being looted. Time for change.
We have seen protests springing up around the country. And that is the really key point about these protests. It's not the urban elite that are taking to the streets. It's the regime's conservative base as well. The crackdown also appears to be intensifying. Iranian state media reporting hundreds of people have been arrested and at least 20 people killed. There is a real tension in Iran between the stagnant economy and the people there and the regime's ability to deliver on some of the economic promises that they have offered in the past.
This regime tries desperately to sow hate between us. But they won't succeed. And when this regime finally falls, and one day it will, Iranians and Israelis will be great friends once again. I wish the Iranian people success in their noble quest for freedom.
If the Iranian dictatorship's history is any guide, we can expect more outrageous abuses in the days to come. The UN must speak out. In the days ahead, we will be calling for an emergency session, both here in New York and at the Human Rights Council in Geneva. We must not be silent. The people of Iran are crying out for freedom. All freedom-loving people must stand with their cause. The international community made the mistake of failing to do that in 2009. We must not make that mistake again.
Well, you got a real sense of what we could do with our media advocacy, and we did that in films. We also do it in music. As you know, the Jay Sekulow Band performed live at Judson University. We played one of our original tunes, Hope of Jerusalem. We're going to play that for you right now.
From these old wooden spaces, remembering those who have passed through before. Send out the primrose, my symbol of courage, my sentiment hungers to understand more. Friends brought together in deep conversation, passions and concerns of this holy land. All of the faces grown sadder to the questions I ask. Without understanding, we get an agreement between. Is all of ours fill this room? Will it change what we've seen? And only God.
can start a new chapter, sharing the blame for the sins of the past, having the vision to change our condition. Out from the shadows our journeys have cast. Think of a time when our children's children will never be touched by the sting of the grave. There is no comfort in acting with courage, but nothing is too difficult for the brave. Although we come from an anguished and grieving land, the prayer of our hearts is the peace that can only come from God's hand. And only God knows when the calm from the storm begins. The basis of hope we say is going to end. When nations can live
That's going to do it for today's broadcast. I hope you enjoyed our deep look into our documentary film, The Export, as well as our new film, Protecting the Promised Land. It's available right now on acljfilms.com. Again, Protecting the Promised Land, a great look at Israel. You can find all of that, as well as our other films, at acljfilms.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.